evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, February 21st, 2020. President Salva Kiir is expected to issue a decree appointing members of the Transitional Government of National Unity anytime from now.
Today, His Excellency the President will issue presidential decree for the appointment of the vice presidents and the dissolution of all the institutions at the national and state level.
And South Sudan's top diplomat says it's time for the international community to help her country.
This kind of decision that are made by countries, and particularly by the head of the state, are very, very important for the sustainability of peace. And that they need to play their role as the region, as international community, to ensure that we go through a transition which is smooth.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir is expected to issue a decree tonight announcing opposition leader Riek Machar to step back into his former position as the country's first vice president. Machar and four other vice presidents will be sworn in tomorrow at a ceremony in Juba to be attended by heads of states from at least two neighboring countries. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
President Kiir and Machar stood alongside each other in the South Sudanese capital to confirm they would form a unity government this Saturday. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwe says an announcement on the country's new senior officials will be made tonight on state-owned television.
Today, His Excellency the President will issue presidential decree for the appointment of the vice presidents and the dissolution of all the institutions at the national and state level. Except the judiciary, of course, but the parliament, the national assembly, the transitional national legislature, and all the now will be appointed. We will be relieved.
Makwe says out of the four vice presidents, the South Sudan Opposition Alliance did not name their candidate ahead of this weekend ceremony.
South Sudan Opposition Alliance failed to reach consensus on their nominee. And as a result, they had six candidates for the position of a vice president. And out of all these groups, five agreed that let us authorize the president to select from among us and that they will abide by the outcome of the selection. So these people have signed a document. It was only Dr. Lema Kwal who refused to sign.
Machar and the three other vice presidents, two from the government and one from the former detainees, will assume their new positions. SPLM-IO Deputy Spokesman Manawa Peter Gatkwoth praised the parties for reaching a compromise on the number of states. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni and Sudan's Prime Minister Mohamed Hamdok and Ethiopia Prime Minister Ahmed Abiy are expected to attend the swearing-in ceremony Saturday at Juba's presidential palace. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
South Sudan's Foreign Minister Awut Deng says the international community should welcome compromises made by her government to scrap off the 32 states. She says South Sudan is committed to ending violence and implementing the revitalized peace deal.
The changes that have happened are changes that will bring peace. They are not changes that will return us to war. We have to move the country forward, and that war has stopped development in South Sudan. And we want, in this period of transition, to work for development of our country. Another key message to the people, people of South Sudan, is that all the our people who are internally displaced in Wau, in Bor, in Malakal, in Juba, that they need to come out, all of them, as well as those who are in the refuge in the neighboring country to return home.
Earlier this week, your ministry did a lot of shake-up. You recalled 43 diplomats from around the world to go back to Juba. Why? Why would you call back your diplomats? You're supposed to deploy them out.
Well, this is a normal practice. That is done all over the world. When you are deployed, and there is a certain period when your time come to an end, and then you are recalled and other diplomats are redeployed. So this is just a normal practice that is being done. And we are doing it just as a Minister of Foreign Affairs to based on our law. There are those who are given deployed for 4 years, and when your term comes to end, then you are recalled back to the headquarters, and then others are redeployed to do the same work that you were doing. So this is a normal practice.
Your government has at least committed themselves to their pledge this time around, because they promised the international community that they were going to form the government of national unity within the 100 days. Given these developments in Juba and the pledges made by President Kiir, if you have a message to the international community, what would your message be?
Well, first of all, what the development since last week in South Sudan has been a huge one. Starting on Saturday the 15th, when our president made this big concession to return the country to 10 states for the sake of peace in our country. It was not an easy move politically. It was the most difficult one, but he has done it as a sacrifice for peace in South Sudan. And in his statement he made, that was a very painful decision, but as long as it will bring back peace to our country, then I have taken that decision for the best interest of our people and for the best interest of the peace in the country. So our message to international community is that this kind of decision that are made by countries, and particularly by the head of the state, are very, very important for the sustainability of peace, and that they need to play their role as the region, as international community, to ensure that we go through a transition which is a smooth, to prepare our people for the next stage, where we will be discussing constitutional process, we will be discussing preparation for the general election. These are key messages that the international community has to welcome the decision of our president, and also to support the transitional government to exercise its mandate to implement the roadmap of the peace agreement, which is very important, and particularly this decision was made to end the suffering of our people.
What are the challenges that are going to face the transitional government of national unity?
Well, what I can say is that every decision that has been taken, it is taken for the interest of peace in our country. Anything that will return peace in the country, it will be taken to ensure that peace come back home. And I think that is the message, the focus must be peace. And when there is peace, there will be development, because peace is the key facilitator of any development in the country.
That was Awud Deng, South Sudan's foreign minister, speaking with me from London yesterday. Even though South Sudan's return to 10 states was welcomed by majority of people in the country, there are some serious questions over the boundaries of states and land rights, especially in places like Malakal in Upper Nile State and the new Rang administrative area in Unity State. My colleague Jason Patinkin spoke with Miklos Gostonyi, who is analyst with the Norwegian Refugee Council. He has also been studying the issue of the 10 states.
Underlying the issue of the number of states is also the question of counties. And during the last few years, as the number of states has increased, different states, and in fact all states, have increased the number of counties in a process that was quite chaotic. And nobody even really knows the exact number of counties that we have right now in South Sudan. Now, with this return to the number of states, we'll start a process of challenging of counties and counties' boundaries. The question of the number of states also does not necessarily deal with the issue of land rights, because the idea that under the number of states going back to 10, we would go back to square zero is actually not realistic. By square zero, I mean 2005. or 2011. Now the question comes for communities to, or what will happen inevitably is that communities will start or will continue fighting over the definition of the boundaries and land rights in areas independently of what the number of states is.
And so in particular, there are a couple very contentious areas. One of them is in Upper Nile State around the main city of Malakal. What are the issues at play around Malakal that will continue to create problems moving forward, even though it is now back to one state of Upper Nile?
Since 2009, specifically, the Dinka and the Shilluk have been challenging the definition of who does Malakal belong to. The Shilluk population in the Malakal POC is waiting for the resolution of land disputes that they have, specifically with the Padang Dinka, that for them is central to making the decision or whether of whether to leave the POC or not. And in many ways, it is unrelated both to the resolution of the number of states and to the formation of the transitional government in Juba. So we cannot or we should not expect in the foreseeable future a major outflow, voluntary outflow of Shilluk residents in the Malakal POC towards Shilluk lands. The problem is less one of how many states do we have or where do the boundaries lie, but the fact that those boundaries, the understanding of those boundaries has dramatically shifted over the years from one in which communities perceived borders as soft. Most land arrangements were flexible. Communities shared land. They had agreements. And pretty much since the CPA was signed, but especially now since this war started in the case of Upper Nile, what has happened is that communities make these absolute claims over land ownership. There is little room for negotiating.
Now, so I guess what can be done, particularly in a case like Malakal, where you have populations of the Dinka and the Shilluk in particular, who previously were interdependent and intermarrying and essentially living together, not without issues, but still living together, to a situation now where it is very divided into these two groups with very disputed hard boundaries.
There needs to be a political decision at the highest level of the presidency, because the Shilluk and the POC seem to very clearly believe that the way in which the war was conducted over the past few years against the Shilluk was a decision that was made at the highest level. They themselves seem to believe that there is a potential for reconciliation with the Padang Dinka. They continue to refer to them as, you know, their families. There needs to be a clear signal by the highest political authorities that there is a willingness to redress land occupation. And secondly, of course, the communities need to talk more to one another, which is very difficult when one of the communities in particular perceives that it is being sidelined by the highest political powers in the country.
Another very contentious or new area that is being looked at with the issue of the states is Ruang, which is now a new administrative area. What are some of the issues that are going on there? Are these issues solved in any way by the creation of an administrative area?
Decision was made by the president this week, and we need more time to interpret what the exact implications will be. Now, what is clear is that this has to do with two things. One, of course, is the fact that there is oil in the region, and so in this case, administrative boundaries are central to who controls or at least who has potential access. The president needed to also cater to some of his constituencies by giving something to his people. And so the creation of this administrative area, that very unexpected, should be seen as a way for the president to cater to some of his constituencies.
That's Miklo Gostonyi, a conflict analyst with the Norwegian Refugee Council, speaking with VOA's Jason Patenkin. Jonglei authorities are making an urgent appeal for humanitarian support to people displaced by intercommunal fighting in Pibor administrative area. The Jonglei State Acting Administrator says more than 3,000 internal displaced persons arrived in Bor County yesterday and are in dire need of humanitarian assistance. Dengai Deng reports for VOA from Juba.
Speaking in her native Murle language, Displaced people resident Mary Tilalo says she and her three children fled to Bor after deadly clashes broke out in Pibor.
When I left that area with my children, I was not coming here to look for food, but firstly to look for where our lives can survive. We feel safe now here, and we are praying so that peace comes in, so that we live in peace with our brothers.
Mabura Tim Mabur, the Jonglei State Acting Administrator, says thousands of internally displaced persons, mostly women, children and the elderly, are now camping on open grounds in harsh weather conditions in Bor County.
The people currently, they are from Greater Pibor, and they arrived yesterday to Anyidir. What we can establish is that we is actually chasing them, but they are saying they are coming here for safety. And so we have already received them, and they are now under our care.
Mabur says state authorities have provided the IDPs with some sacks of food items, but says there are not enough supplies for everyone. He is calling on humanitarian agencies to provide food, shelter, and medicine.
We are urging international community and agencies that are operating in the area here to also take part in conducting an assessment and also escalate the same case to the major donors so that they can intervene and help them. So they really need some help.
Yesterday, Boma Administrative Area authorities said intercommunal fighting between the Lawnwer and Murle left an unspecified number of people dead and many others injured. Peter Mawuna Jack, the Acting Relief and Rehabilitation Commission Coordinator for Bor County, confirms his office is aware of the large influx of IDPs from Pibor to Bor.
I had a meeting today with different partners, and almost they are all willing to support. So definitely by Monday, there will be a tangible support from different agencies. I'm appealing to them to speed up with the assistances, because these people are in need, because when they were running from there, they had nothing in hand.
Ajak is also asking Jonglei state officials to provide security to the IDPs as their numbers continue to increase in Bor County. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a call from human rights groups for Sudan to scrub off repressive laws. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the most dangerous situation you have ever been in?
When the war broke out on the 8th, so it was really, really very bad situation, hearing gunshots all over, seeing people being killed next to me, and that is the worst situation I've ever been.
We were robbed, and people were killed, a pregnant one was killed, people were injured, so I was like close to death. That was the most life-threatening situation I've been.
I got stranded at the area I went to, and it was a risky place, actually. So I got confronted by people, and it took a while for me to get myself out of that situation. Someone even showed me, like, a weapon, and I had to man over myself to get away.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Human Rights Watch is urging the transitional government in Sudan to accelerate legal and institutional reforms to ensure that people's rights are protected at every stage of the justice process in the country. The rights group also expressed concern over delays in forming a legislative council, a key component for revamping Sudan's laws, especially those that discriminate against women. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Khartoum.
Human Rights Watch, or HRW, is urging Sudan's transitional government to demonstrate visible progress on domestic justice initiatives. HRW Executive Director Kenneth Both said in a statement yesterday that the Sudanese government should ensure democratic rights are adopted, that so many Sudanese took to the streets at a great risk to themselves to achieve. Jehan Henry of HRW's Africa Division said via WhatsApp from Nairobi, the government has made some progress on rights reforms, including revoking the Public Order Act, which described how women should dress in public, and criminalizing female genital mutilation.
The government has committed verbally to making these changes a reality. This is part of the new Sudan. And justice, human rights, and accountability are part of the vision for the new Sudan. And we would like to make sure that that is on record and that that really is going to be pushed forward.
Henry says HRW staff discovered that the committee set up to investigate killings during the June 3rd crackdown committed by the government forces on protesters has yet to complete its work and has not met international standard for protecting witnesses. She says Sudanese are frustrated over the slow pace of the investigations, especially on crimes of gender-based violence.
We learned about the challenges that the Attorney General faces in terms of properly investigating the extremely vast atrocities that have been committed over the last regime. In addition, we talked to the committee that is dealing with the June 3rd attack on protesters, and they are struggling with resources as well.
Henry says Sudanese authorities should make sure that committee has the political backing and necessary protection in place to investigate those responsible for crimes committed higher up in the chain of command. She says the government must also ensure that those arrested who works for Ulster President Omar al-Bashir are properly charged, have access to lawyers, and are prosecuted in a timely, open manner, and that they face trial.
They need to be done in a way that upholds the rule of law, because this government, this new Sudan, needs to demonstrate to the world that it is actually observing, respecting, and upholding the rule of law and human rights. We cannot have a situation where we have former regime leaders being held for indefinite periods of time without charge.
The HRW official emphasized that the transitional government must address all aspects of gender discrimination, including legal guardianship, marriage, and inheritance provisions.
The government still has a lot to do in terms of equalizing gender and gender justice.
Henry says that Sudanese leaders must make sure that unequal, very discriminatory, and demeaning laws that have governed Sudanese women for decades are lifted. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
And it's now time for listeners' comments, which is part of the my favorite part of the show. We have heard from many of you this week about events in the news. Deng Luet Deng writes, "Hello, South Sudan in Focus. I am writing from a refugee camp in Adjumani. I would like to convey my sincere encouragement messages to our leaders to maintain the peace upon the formation of the Government of National Unity. We, the refugees, are tired of staying in other countries, and our wish is to see peace prevail once again in our country. We say no to war. Enough is enough." Chol Amur Rep from John Garang Memorial University of Science and Technology writes, "I'm very glad for the critical decision made by our president, His Excellency Salva Kiir Mayardit, to revert our country back to 10 states. The unanimous creation of the 32 states meant more divisions based on tribal lines among the people of South Sudan. Though there are a lot of mixed reactions concerning the decision of the president, I am very optimistic that our country will return to its original picture of 2011 when we got our independence. Please, John, play for me John Kudise's song." Martin Mayuel Wagol writes, "Hello, VOA. I am a South Sudanese citizen living in Uganda. I congratulate the people of South Sudan, particularly our political leaders, for giving peace a chance. Once again, congratulations to the people of South Sudan." Maluet Paul Achok in Juba writes, "It's good to see Dr. Machar in government. Congratulations to the parties of the revitalized government." Bangong Achek Babol from Juba writes, "Hello, I have been following South Sudan in focus since 2016. The stories that you have been telling us are amazing, but the most amazing one I have heard was the sanctions imposed on the country's first vice president, Taban Dengai." He continues, "He is a crook who has perpetuated gross human rights, sexual assault, and crimes against humanity. I strongly urge the U.S. government to keep on identifying those who are working hard to block the implementation of the peace process." He continues, "Secondly, I was very frustrated when the self-imposed chairman of the Greater Bull Youth Union in Juba unilaterally took fake decision to write an article in a Gamlong newspaper claiming that the Bull youth around the world support the existence of 32 states, which is contrary to the opinion of the majority of young people from Bull." Abraham Manyang Marial in Rumbek writes, "John Tanza, we don't want President Salva Kiir to include individuals tested before and have failed in the upcoming Artugano. Enough is enough. No to recycling dead woods." Hakim Cosmos from Yei River County in Central Equatoria State writes, "Hello, VOA team, especially our homeboy, John. Allow me to congratulate our president for the wise idea of returning our lovely country back to 10 states. I'm writing this because I am the happiest person now. May the Almighty grant you more, John." Cosmos, thanks for praying for me. Peter Goch Anyang in Duke Payuel writes, "I urge both Dr. Riak and President Kiir to place people's interest first and form inclusive government that will benefit the suffering citizens in the displaced and refugee camps." A listener who did not mention his name writes, "It was a bad news for aid workers who were killed during the delivery of humanitarian assistance to vulnerable people of South Sudan. We humanitarian workers across South Sudan are demanding for more information." And John Lino from Yei writes, "I am really very, very happy with our President Salva Kiir for the wonderful decision taken to scrub off 32 states and return to 10 states. My spirit really told me that you are a good leader, but there are some bad elements around you who are not leaders. Thank you so much for your messages." That is our show for this Friday. We now leave you with Emmanuel Lasso singing about South Sudan. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Have a good weekend and join us again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.